Good morning. We are back, Bostopian News, with Evan George to take a peek at will be round one of a many-part series involving Boston's budget for next fiscal year. Woo! And that is almost a fully sincere woo, as this document is the most important thing and is ultimately the only reason why it matters who we elect, which is politics is about power and the use of resources. And you want the resources to be going towards the initiatives that you care about and defeating your political enemies who want the resources to go to the issues that they care about. That's what politics is. And despite all the headlines and the drama and people shifting alliances and mostly symbolic votes on symbolic matters, where the money goes is the final say on what is a politician's ideology and what direction are we going as a city. Now, before we go into the document itself, we're going to take a little quick peek at the fiscal health of Boston, because there is two different narratives. The first coming from Mayor Michelle Wu. As is custom, every time the mayor submits a budget, it normally has, you know, almost a cover letter attached, a couple pages outlining how much money she wants, where she wants it to go, and what the overall thinking is behind it. And as I mentioned before, the mayor submitting this document is really round one of what is supposed to be a multi-step process. It used to be, now behind closed doors, councilors would lobby for their own little pet projects and initiatives as they slowly are tweaking what the document looks like. Now, that is supposed to be a lot more of a transparent process, given the power that we gave the Boston City Council. However, if you've been following me any length of time, then you know that that power we gave them was completely a charade. It was a lie. It was fake. And Mayor Michelle Wu has done everything in her power to make sure that that ballot initiative that we all passed is functionally meaningless. And given the dynamic of the current Boston City Council, it is overwhelmingly pro-Wu. We need to think of a fun name for this faction, but she has more than enough votes of people who are on her side, who are really just there to vote the way she tells them to. And so I don't think we will see that much drama that we've experienced over the past 2 years, at least in terms of the Boston City Council trying to use their power to influence the budget. So I really don't think this document is going to change that much from the initial version that Michelle has sent this April. But with all that, fiscal health of the city. Let's hear from Mayor Michelle Wu in her own words. I transmit here with my fiscal year 2025 recommended budget for the city of Boston. I promise I won't read the entire thing in this voice. This recommended $4.6 billion FY25 operating budget and $4.7 billion capital plan, and also in case you're new here, the Boston City Council votes on three different budgets. One is for the Boston Public Schools, one is the operating budget, and then one is the capital plan. The capital plan is always in a five-year cycle, so it's difficult to measure against it when trying to determine, is it a good document? Is it a bad document? Because it just overlaps with different administration and goals. And it's a lot more about like infrastructure improvements. It's nothing really that sexy. All the fun stuff in our focus is on the operating budget. But I continue. This recommended $4.6 billion operating budget work to build on steady progress to make Boston a home for everyone, where our community's needs are met and dreams can grow. Over the last two budget cycles, our administration has laid a foundation to focus on what families need to thrive, and we've invested in the resources and infrastructure for affordability, resiliency, and equity throughout our neighborhoods. This year, we doubled down on delivering excellent city services by improving existing processes and expanding access to reach more families more effectively. We also focus on systems to maintain and sustain city programming and infrastructure through coordination and planning for the future. Beautiful stuff. But okay, now let's get to the fiscal health. In total, the recommended FY25 annual operating budget proposes a year-over-year increase of $344 million, or 8%, over fiscal year 24. Remember that 8% number. I'm going to go back to it many, many times in this episode. This year, the city experienced solid revenue growth, driven by property tax collections, excise, and interest earned on investments. As we continue to gain greater understanding of the long-term economic impacts of the pandemic and prepare for shifts in the value of commercial real estate through the scheduled reevaluation cycle this calendar year, we are also seeking legislative tools to guard against immediate rate shock to residents and take protective action so that future tax bills for all property owners, commercial and residential, are similar to those in recent years. Okay, so what is she saying there? It's essentially that our revenue growth over the last 2 years has been great, there's no need to panic, and don't worry, we're taking a little look at the commercial real estate value. And if you've been keeping up with the headlines, what she is referencing there, and it is probably the biggest threat to Boston minus climate change, is a study that was done recently by the Boston Policy Institute, which looked at the declining worth of Boston's office buildings. Because, as I'm sure you know, there is a lot of vacant office space. And with people shifting to hybrid scheduling, work-from-home scheduling, mostly because of the norm that was created during the pandemic, the value of these properties is tanking. And according to this study, that the city's tax revenue could fall between $1.2 billion to $1.5 billion below the projections that we're supposed to have, basically meaning we're going to be cut short $1.5 billion from money that we thought we'd be getting. And what this report assumes is that office values will drop 20 to 30% and overall commercial values decline 12 to 18%. Do you have to have those numbers memorized? No. What is important? As commercial real estate value decreases, so does the amount of the taxes that we get from it. And what makes Boston unique compared to other, I'll use the phrase, major U.S. cities, is that how we have our commercial property tax is much different than the residential property tax. And our commercial property tax, like office and retail, are taxed at a rate of twice as high as residential properties. So basically, if you're a homeowner here, your taxes are lower when compared to if it was an office building. And apparently, we are unique in doing that, especially by the margin of how much more we tax businesses over homes. And I am reading off and on right now from a Catherine Carlock article in The Globe on February 15th. So we have this unique tax structure where we are over-relying on commercial property taxes. And now on top of that, we are dealing with the massive drop in commercial real estate prices, which leaves us with less money. Now, also apparently, there is some major office spaces opening up right now this year that we are really banking on the growth from. So just reading from you from this Boston Globe article. The city also projects an unprecedented $121.8 million in net growth just this fiscal year, Beal said, with new skyscrapers, Winthrop Center, One Congress, and One Post Office Square coming online. So we have these big office spaces just about to open, and now it's everyone's kind of looking back and seeing how much is this property value going to drop. And even more recently from this study, some of the things they were hinting at were confirmed. And there was a office tower right in downtown Crossing. It was bought by Synergy Investments, and they paid $78 million for it just this year. However, that same office tower sold for $121 million 20 years ago, just about, in 2005. So think of how much property value has increased since 2005. And yet, this property sold for 30% less than the 2005 level. That is insane. That is sound the alarms in terms of the massive plummeting of property values, or more specifically, commercial values. Because as we know, home prices, residential units, that is only continuing to increase at historic staggering numbers. I think most recently, the Greater Boston, they had a 9% increase compared to March of last year, whereas these things are plummeting. And so to try to fix this, because one of the only solutions we would have is to mess with that ratio, meaning start taxing the residential properties more to make up for the loss of revenue. And there is no politician that wants to raise property taxes on homeowners. And so what the mayor is trying to do, and she referenced it in that letter that I read for you, because of course we have to go on our knees to the State House and beg them, is to change the rate that we're currently taxing businesses and to increase it. Since the overall property is decreasing, so therefore is the tax revenue that we're getting for it, will increase the percentage, so we'll be getting more taxes from commercial real estate, while their tax bill is supposed to be decreasing because, again, the property values are decreasing. And current state law, it allows us to make a change up to 175%. However, what Michelle Wu wants is an additional 25, so basically give us the ability to increase that tax shift by 200%. And this fight, or at least how she is going to present it, is it's either we raise taxes on homeowners or we raise taxes on businesses. What do you want? And to try to make that the debate, whereas, you know, all these articles that came out the moment that she proposed this, talking about how she wants to crush businesses, yada, yada, yada. So that'll be the narrative fight. We'll see what happens. But for our focus, it is definitely troubling in terms of the forecast of Boston's resources. And it is just another reason why many people, myself included, lobbied so hard for defunding the police efforts, knowing that there was going to be a time when, hey, we're not always going to be in an upswing, and we need to set the precedent now when we have the political climate to do so, to start putting more and more money into public services. And now that we've completely missed that political window, guess what we're now going to be funneling more and more resources into, even when our fiscal outlook doesn't look good? That's right, it's the police. And wait till you see the percentage margins that Michelle Wu wants to increase the police department compared to everything else. And that absolutely is going to be the focus in just a little bit. However, before we do that, another great part of the budget is they normally include a lot of great demographic information about the city and how much has changed year over year. So let's do some vegetables first, and then we will talk about Michelle Wu and the police. And I'm reading just directly from the full budget document itself. The city of Boston ranks as the 25th largest city by population in the United States, with our estimate population being 649,768. And a big talking point of Mayor Michelle Wu, and I love that she includes it in all of her budgets, is the massive population change within Boston from the 1950s to the 1980s, where our population declined by 30% from our peak, 1950, 801,000, to our lowest point being in about 1980 at 562,994. So 800,000 to 560,000. All of that, again, was white suburban flight. However, from that point, we began to slowly increase. And in 2020, we hit 675,000. Fantastic. But what else happened? COVID-19. And we lost just under 4%, 3.8% of our population from there, which is why we have now experienced a decrease. And according to this document, that was common throughout cities. I'm not going to look into it, but I do believe it. And talking about that white flight, in 1950, white residents comprised 95% of Boston's population. And then by 2022, that number now is about 44%. And in terms of ages, the median age in Boston is 33, which they cite because of the number of students and young professionals. And if you look at development in this city, we are not building for families, we are building for this demographic. Just about one out of every three people is between the ages of 18 to 34, with then people from 35 to 54, about a quarter of the population, 55 to 64, 10%, and ages 65 and up is 13%. And in terms of economics, per capita income, the median, $101,000. $72, which is an increase of 24% from 2010. And obviously, that number changes drastically depending on what neighborhood you're in. And I do not believe they really break that down in this budget, but we all know it. And if you look at our employment, 17.5% are in the healthcare social assistance field, with then over 14% being in scientific technical services. I think now 12.5% is in finance and insurance. So no surprise, the health and science industries comprise together almost a third of our employment. Now looking at transportation, 35% of households in Boston do not have a vehicle, which of course then means that two-thirds of households do. And about 38% of Boston's residential workers commute without a car, which, my God, we got to get that percentage up. We need that entire ratio flipped. And according to this, about one-fifth of residents commute via public transportation, one-fifth work from home, and then three-fifths would be taking their personal vehicle. So again, we need that drastically flipped. And now just a little bit on housing. Two-thirds of our housing stock are rentals. Not much of a surprise. And the most affordable neighborhood, Hyde Park, with the average monthly rent of $2,357. And now compare that to the South Boston waterfront, the Seaport, over $5,000 a month. $5,095 to be exact. Absolutely wild. And I hate to say it, but I don't see those numbers changing anytime soon. It'll just continue to get worse and worse and worse, and I'm purely just going off of the type of developments that the BPDA continue to approve. They are not focused on families. It is lab, it is office space, and then try to squeeze in as many studio and one-bedroom apartments as possible, and as many at market rate as possible. And I'm sure people saw the study of migration out of Massachusetts. The largest demographic, people between the ages of 25 to 44. Why? Because that's around the age when if you want to have a family, you start doing that, and Boston is not being built as a place for families, period. Doesn't matter how many times they say it in the statements. If you look at the development, it's fake, it's a lie, it's not true. But okay, enough of the demographics. Now let's take a peek at Mayor Michelle Wu's budget and where she wants the $4.6 billion to go. Though first, you might be asking yourself, how do we get the $4.6 billion for our budget? Fantastic question. 71% comes from property tax. That's commercial, real estate, and housing. So that is more than two-thirds, it's almost three-fourths, is just from our taxes on property. And it's also why it is such alarm bells of what is happening with our commercial real estate property value. Now, the next biggest chunk we get from state aid, which is just over 10%. This graphic has it at 11. Now, one thing that's interesting is Boston used to receive a lot more money from the state. I think that number was closer to 30% in the early 2000s. I would like to track it from, you know, 1950 onward would be kind of its own different episode in terms of the relationship between Boston and the State House. But we get about 10, 11% from the state. Another 11% is revenue that some of our departments bring in. Think of ticketing, for example. 6% excise tax, and then they have it at 1% non-reoccurring revenue. What I want you to remember is that 71% from property taxes, that is how we make our money. Now, in terms of how it's allocated, the biggest chunk, and we're going to get more into the specifics in a second, one-third of our budget goes to Boston Public Schools. The next biggest chunk, 16%, is public safety. So that is police, that is fire, that is some emergency services. And then from there, all other departments are essentially at 11%. And then we have just different percentages for charter school tuition. We have to pay 6%, which is ridiculous. God, we got to get rid of those. But most of it just goes to the overall functioning of the city. And then, of course, we have fixed costs, pensions, healthcare, all of that. And in assessing Mayor Michelle Wu, the number that we're working with is 8%. because this is overall an 8% increase. And so what you want to see are the initiatives, the policies, the departments that you like to be at 8%, meaning they're growing proportionally with the overall budget, or more than that. And vice versa, the departments, organizations, policies, the things you don't want, you either want them ideally losing funding or at a minimum coming in under that 8% number. Now, one of the biggest changes in why we are increasing by 8% is because we are absorbing or creating a whole new planning department. It's effectively net neutral in terms of its impact on the budget because we are now gaining all these properties that the BPDA used to get their money from that is now being absorbed in the city, and that's about $40 million. And so this department costs us about $40 million, and that's going to be more or less, I think we're going to end up getting more money from the revenue from all the properties that we get to oversee and manage. But that is net neutral, but it accounts for roughly, I think, 0.9%, let's just call it 1% of the change in the budget, the overall budget, is just from this new planning department. But I'm going to keep saying it. We're right now going to focus on 8%. And now let's get out of the way. What is going on with the police? Because there are actually two very different numbers in terms of its percentage increase. And don't worry, I'll be able to clarify. Now, according to Mayor Michelle Wu, in the document itself, page 37, for those of you playing along at home, she writes, the Boston Police Department budget will increase by 2%, or $10.7 million. The primary driver includes settled collective bargaining contracts for two of the sworn unions, including the BPPA, its largest police union, as well as SEIU, which represents several hundred BPD employees. The fiscal year 25 budget funds a recruit class to replace projected attrition, as well as a promotional exam to fill a new list of sergeant, lieutenant, and captain promotions. The department will also receive $200,000 to support professional development for officers. So according to Mayor Michelle Wu, the police department's budget's only increasing by 2%. People should be happy because it's under 8%, right? Well, now let's read from a Boston Globe article. Among the top line items on the city's budget are expenses for the police and fire departments. Wu proposed 2025 budget would boost spending on the police department by 12.3%, from about $405 million to $454.9 million. 12.3%. And this is written by Nikki Griswold, Emma Platoff, Boston Globe, April 8th. And honestly, if it wasn't for them writing that one sentence, I probably would have missed it. And the reason is there is some funky spreadsheet changes in the proposed budget that Mayor Michelle Wu sent to City Hall. And so here's what I mean. On every budget that is submitted, there's a page, it's normally pretty early in the document. For this most recent one, it's on page 28, where they give you the last two fiscal year budgets in their actual numbers. Meaning once all the changes have been done, everything's been calculated. So this budget has the actual fiscal year 22, the actual fiscal year 23. And then they also give you the fiscal year 24 budget. But that is not actual because we're still in the year. We're still in that fiscal year. So those numbers are going to be a little fluid from next budget when we now will have the actual numbers. And then so we have the fiscal year 24 budget, all itemized and listed by department. And then the proposed fiscal year 25 budget, what again this document is about, and the last column always just shows you the net difference between the two, meaning between the most previous budget and this current budget. And so what I normally do to get percentages is I simply just look at what was the percentage change from last year to this year, and that is how we measure growth. And if I did that just like how I normally do, then I would have gotten Mayor Michelle Wu's number of 2%. However, if you actually now go back to the fiscal year 24 document, and none of this is explained, by the way, which is annoying, but I tracked it down for you. So if we go back to last year's budget for the police, we allocated $404.9 million, we'll call it. Or we can just round up and call it $405 million. That is what is on the official document. That is how much our Boston City Council voted for. That is what Mayor Michelle Wu signed. However, if now you flip back to the fiscal year 25 budget, under the column for fiscal year 24, what this budget has listed for police department is $444,000. So it is basically a $40 million swing from if you looked at the original budget, and then if you looked at this number on this spreadsheet, is $40 million differences. And now what is to account for that? And I'll be honest, I don't know how common it is for that number to change. Now, again, I know it changes once it goes from the actual numbers. So that's like 2 years out, once they have the final number, that number will look different. And I don't know how common it is to change it on this spreadsheet in this moment. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But that $40 million difference, I believe, because again, this isn't clearly explained, comes from two things. One, it could come from them already accounting in how much overtime the police have gone over, and so factoring in all those numbers. But what I actually think it is the retroactive pay from this new collective bargaining. Because the police unions have been working without a contract since 2001. They didn't want to renegotiate during the George Floyd protests because they knew that the political climate was not in their favor. So they intelligently delayed, and our politicians, in this case Marty Walsh, more than happy to help them do that. And they delayed long enough that they got Mayor Michelle Wu, and she gave them the sweetest deal imaginable. People know I work part-time as a bartender. I talk to cops at the bar, and when I asked them about the contract, they said, oh my God, it's amazing. And there's no greater proof that this is going to do absolutely nothing in terms of changing the function of the police in our society than how quickly the police themselves signed this contract. That's just how much money and how little they gave away. All those reforms that she touted, to quote one lawyer from the ACLU, is not going to change much. It's just on paper. They still control it. There was a whole hearing about it. I'm still looking forward, or I still want to do an episode just more about this union contract where Michael Cox was saying like, oh yeah, like we still control every step of this. Like these reforms aren't doing anything. The police are the ones who are in control of policing themselves. That does not change. Anyway, Mayor Michelle Wu's 2% is wrong. And the only way that you could say that it was correct in terms of being, you know, accurate is if you then had to go back, we'll say, okay, well then this massive increase happened two cycles ago because of the retroactive pay. And so you should get dinged for that because she has been marketing herself as somebody who's, you know, doing those common sense reforms of the police. If you were to ask your average person on the street, where is she putting more resources and funding? Is it for equity initiatives? Is it for housing and healthcare? Or is it for the police? Most people would say the former. That is the perception. However, in reality, this change, just how bad this union contract was, does account for over a 12% increase. So we have an overall budget going at 8% increase, and we have the police skyrocketing at a 12% increase. And now let's look at that number compared to all the other departments. Education. Boston Public Schools increasing 5.6%. The police department is doubling at the rate of increase than the Boston Public Schools. They are at 5.6, where the overall budget is increasing at 8%, and the police are over 12. How does that difference compare with the public image that people have of Mayor Michelle Wu? Let's look at some others. The Boston Centers for Youth and Families. You know, I think she mentions families as the top thing about what the budget is for. That's increasing by 1%. The Age Strong Commission, 1%. The Boston Public Library, 1%. The arts, decreasing by 1%. And now get ready for this, and I want you to remember, 8% increase in the budget, 12% increase for the police. Human Rights Commission, decrease 18%. Office of Immigrant Advancement, increase 2%. Black Male Advancement, increase 1.5%. Fair Housing and Equity, decrease 5.4%. LGBTQ Advancement, increase 6%. All of these numbers are either they're losing money in terms of real funding, or they are all under the 8% threshold that the overall budget is increasing. And where Again, are the massive increases going? The police. The narrative of woke woo and all of these things is completely BS. It does not exist in reality. Now, to be fair, there are elements that are close or are actually very good in this budget in terms of their increase. Women's advancement, 8.5%. So still not as much as the police, but increasing slightly more than the overall budget. The Commission on Disability. This does beat the police. They have an increase of 14%. However, when you look at their total funding, that change to get a massive 14% increase is $105,000. So that's like one position. So they grew one position and it increases their total share by 14%. That is just more how ridiculously underfunded it is. And of course, one of my hobby horses, and again, I'm very fair, youth jobs, 20% increase. So love to see it. And again, that increase, that is about 3.5 million. So that is still a drop in the bucket compared to our overall spending on the police, which for this budget, that final number, in case I didn't say it, is $454,893,961. And don't forget, that doesn't even take into account them going over with their overtime payments, which you know they're going to do because they do it every year. So when asked, or the next time you hear about like woke woo, all she does is care about the queer community and minorities. She hates the police. She wants to defund the police. She's a communist. Look at the budget. Look at the numbers. It's all the increases are going towards police, and the other departments aren't even keeping up with the rate of the overall budget. And what is do you think is going to happen once we have less revenue because of what's happening with our commercial real estate? When put to, well, now we need to start cutting, do you think a politician now is going to start cutting police? No, they didn't even do it during the George Floyd protest. They're not going to do it now. All of these budgets and all these services and all these other departments, they're the ones who are going to face the axe. That is why the Defund the Police movement was so important at the time and why I am still livid at all the liberal politicians that just delayed long enough that now the climate has changed. But there it is, Mayor Michelle Wu's intro budget. As I mentioned at the top, she has more than enough votes, more than enough people that have to thank her for getting the job to begin with. I don't think there's going to be any spine to really challenge this from the left. If anything, I wouldn't be shocked if they give more money to the police, but I will track it, I will follow it, and I will report back to all of you. And if you would like to help me do so, the best way of doing that, patreon.com/bostopianews. For as little as a cup of coffee a month, you can say thank you. You want to buy me a beer? Love it. A lunch once a month? Fantastic. And if you can't afford it, you don't have the resources, I understand. That's why all of my content is free regardless. Though you're not just supporting the weekly podcast, but you are also supporting all of my work on TikTok for as long as that entity exists and on Instagram. But again, if you don't have the resources, that's okay. Liking, subscribing, retweeting, promoting, sharing is really the best way. And with that, take care. And as always, I hope you have a great rest of your day.